Chirurgium by Nick Keim. Narrated by Ian Brooker. The air is cold and reeks of counterseptic. Very little light penetrates the dingy apothecarium, because I have set the lumens low to keep my subjects quiescent as I conduct my research. The gloom focuses what light I allow to permeate and hones it surgically like a scalpel. I have many blades, many drills and shears, hooks, saws and syringes. Each instrument is a vital tool in my surgeon's arsenal. Every limb of the armature I carry is as essential as my actual physical appendages. Not only do my tools cut flesh, they explore truth. Secrets reside in the flesh. Secrets I mean to excise and then study. Only here, in this apothecarium, can I become who I truly am. Within these cloistered rooms, I am detached from emotion, and do not see the corpses that end up on my slab as anything except bodies. Allies, adversaries, they are the same when rendered down to their constituent parts by blades and chemicals. I become the armature. Its cuts are my cuts. Its vials and filters are a constituent part of my own physiology. As I conduct my work, I am not the transhuman being my brothers have come to know me as. I am a part. I am the chirurgeon. Several of my patients reach me as corpses. Broken bodies, even dead and inert ones, can yield knowledge, though. Others carry injuries from which there is no recovery. Or at least, if it suits my purpose, I ensure they make no recovery. Fewer still I can actually save, and this flesh matter interests me the least. Apothecary is my vocation, but it is not my passion. My interest lies in what comprises the essence of a subject, for within the genetic code of each is the means to unlock godhood, or some power akin to it. Creation and amalgamation, expressed in patchwork renditions of man, reaching for the apogee of scientific achievement, the quest for the universal panacea of life, nothing less than perfection. I do not think of it as hubris. Nor do I consider that I overreach. I know who I am and what I do. I am Fabius, and I am a herald of evolution. My most recent subject lies upon the medislab, alive but numbed from the neck down. The surgery I have planned is both invasive and extreme. I confess to a tremor of excitement at the prospect of it. A contagion riddles this bodily form, lying beneath my chirurgeon's blades, and I mean to find it and cut it out. Begin audio log. A461/0316. My voice is a dry, throated rasp as the analog recorder begins to spool with dull half clicks and makes me realize how long it has been since I have spoken to another living soul. That would be my father when he was snared by his own game. Enslaved? By what? Guilt? Perhaps. I have left him with his brother, or the thing that looks very much like him, albeit with head now attached. It is diverting but not fulfilling, and it does not answer the question which the body on my slab poses. Is there a cure? As yet, I have no answer, and this vexes me. Left alone by Fulgrim, I can at least continue my research in relative peace. The laboratorium is a separate annex from the apothecarian, one known only to me. It is a refuge for my mind as much as it is for my instruments and samples. Most precious are the amniotic caskets and the imperfect spawn within. I keep every failed experiment, knowing that I shall learn from the previous iteration and adapt. Every scrap of flesh has its uses. Nothing is ever wasted in striving for the perfect expression of mankind. I lose time in this place, buried in research, obsessively experimenting. I know I have been down here for hours, possibly days already, but my preparation is exacting and comprehensive. I cannot stint, for this particular work is too important. I begin cataloguing, as I always do. Height, mass, and any remarkable visual data are recorded. This is largely perfunctory and not crucial to my examination. It begins in earnest as I cut. I am beginning with a Y-shaped incision, first medial to lateral and then along the mid-sagittal plane, anterior, proximal to jugular and lower abdomen. The chirurgeon reacts instantly. As the other metal limbs loiter with arachnid poise above the subject's jellied flesh, a single barbed appendage descends to make the first cut. It goes deep, all the way to the black carapace that resides beneath the epidermis and dermis and buried within the subcutaneous tissue. The blade describes the Y-shaped incision as directed, drawing little blood. As the first arm reacts, two more descend, each terminating in a pair of forceps that gently peel back the skin and flesh to expose the interface. A glossy black membrane is revealed, fitted with circular transfusion points and neural sensors. Extraction is difficult, but not impossible. As a section of black carapace is removed, a PICT screen situated above the medislab relates further data concerning the blood-slick rib plate beneath it. Visual examination of blood toxicity suggests a worsening of condition since previous examination. Access record V460/0418. A brief interlude of static obscures the image as the recording cogitator searches for the requested file. A muted image capture is relayed that confirms my initial analysis. I blink-click further instructions, and my chirurgeon's limbs do the rest. Inserting a cannula into the pale flesh of the subject's shoulder to extract a sample for more detailed examination later. As the recording of the current procedure resumes, I see that the fluid excised into the glass receptacle of the cannula is thin and distorted by minute waxy deposits. The hot, metallic reek of blood wars with the odour of counterseptic, and I reduce the temperature further to maintain optimal environmental conditions. Addendum to cursory visual examination. Ossified growths infect rib plate, suggesting entire skeletal structure is at risk from bone deformation. Potential osmodular corruption. The mutations are small, but visible without the need of microscopic examination. I am reminded of hooks or tiny claws jutting from the ribs. A bone saw burrs noisily. I catch sight of it descending in my peripheral vision, the light refracting from its rapidly turning blade. Monomolecular steel shaves transhuman bone mass easily, the slivers captured in a trough and deposited in a lozenge-shaped canister for later analysis. Initiating invasive exploration into bone strata with a single sagittal cut across sternum. I employ clamps to hold the envelope of skin in place, before using a sternal saw to shear the central rib bone in half. It takes several minutes. Transhuman bone mass is tough and thick. I watch silently and patiently until it is done. A rancid, burning smell assails my nostrils. Wisps of powdered bone drift through the shafts of stark light, illuminating the medislab like dust motes. Secondary, medial to lateral, anterior cuts to release bone plate from housing in order to expose organs and begin more detailed biological analysis. I document with my eyes and my voice. After breaking through the sternum, the saw continues and starts to cut two perfectly identical squares of bone from the subject's rib plate. Unlike human autopsy or invasive surgery, a rib spreader is of little to no use in the case of transhuman anatomy. The ossified carapace is too hard and unyielding. An aperture must be opened in the solid cage of bone that encases a legionary's vulnerable organs. The entire bone plate itself must be severed from the ribs that arc around to the spine and lifted off like a grisly hatch. I am all too familiar with this procedure and conduct it almost without conscious thought. This takes time. And as the whine of razor-edged teeth sundering bone fades to white noise, I decide to return to a much earlier analysis I conducted when first accepting the symbolic helix of my order. Halt recording! Access archive! I blink-click the appropriate file from a screed of data relayed on a second picked screen. A few seconds lapse as the cogitator finds and plays the requested audio log. I recognize my voice and sneer at the youth and ignorance of it. Personal log. Fabius, 3rd Legion, Apothecarian Cadre. A terrible calamity has befallen us. We, who in our hubris believed ourselves perfect, have come undone by an imperfect system. The words spur my mind towards the past and are soon usurped by memory. I cleanse the blade of my gladius on the scrap of cloak still hanging from my shoulder guards. Another battle, another compliance. A society lies smashed beneath the booted heel of the crusade. For terror, for the emperor, and the promulgation of the imperial truth. The blood shed, the killing faded slowly. Stalking through dust-choked ruins, ears ringing with the percussive bellow of bolters. Some of my kinsmen wanted nothing more than to relive this day over and over. I longed for something more.
A war well won, Fabius, uttered a familiar voice behind me.
I was standing on a ridge where a city once was, the shattered remains of a great statue of its potentate under my booted feet, and serving as little more than a vantage point now. From it, I saw tanks and the numerous Geno cohorts of the Imperial Army. I saw discipline masters shouting orders, but their words were swallowed up by the death throes of a city breaking apart. Aye, Lycaon. Perhaps. As I cast my eye over the aftermath, I saw smoke enough to blot out the midday suns, and fire sufficient to burn a world. In essence, that was precisely what we had done.
So melancholic, brother, said Lycaon, jovial, as he wrapped my arm with a gauntleted fist.
He saved my life today. Again. Few wielded a sword as well as my vassal brother. I sheathed my gladius as Lycaon raised his, trying to catch a ray of sun against its gilded blade. He managed it through a brief break in the smoke cloud and basked, as he always did, in glory.
You would think a warrior's mood would lighten at the apex of victory.
He turned to face me, slipping sword back into scabbard, and I met his gaze. Lycaon was a seventh-generation Loculus, descended from the old houses of Terra before they were forced into supplication. Like me, his eyes were violet, and his hair was a golden yellow, like the sun he had strived so hard to capture upon the plasteel of his sword. As warriors of the Third Legion, known by some as his heralds, we wore power armour emblazoned with the thunderbolt and rayed sun. Unlike me, Lycaon had a yearning for command and displayed all the traits of the militaristic aristocracy to which he traced his lineage. My demeanour would improve if our numbers could be swelled. Ever since Proxima, Lycaon hissed, turning aside so I saw him only in profile.
Be still, Fabius. Exult in triumph as I do.
He gestured out beyond the ruins to the battlefield below us, where the Geno cohort still cheered.
As they do.
Lesser mortals, military levies and Terran hosts of men bayed and hollered in the artificial basin we had made with our preliminary bombardment. I did not have the heart to tell Lycaon. The reason there were so many was because our ranks had thinned egregiously since the Selenite plot. The cultists hated the Emperor and his warriors. They saw tyranny, not unity, in the assimilation of the techno-barbarian tribes of old Earth.
Remember Proxima, said Lycaon, puffing up his chest with pride at the memory of fighting alongside the Emperor. Such glories! We shall see their like again, brother.
I do not see the glory in this, Lycaon. I see only further attrition. Lycaon scowled.
You see Selenites at every turn. There are vaults on Terra that would see us renewed. By the throne of Earth, we are proof of it.
It was true. Several of the Legion were here only by dint of those reserves. Rapid implantation and deployment. It had felt hurried and desperate, though. Lycaon could clearly see I remained unconvinced.
Speak to Legion Master Thralus, he said. Have him reassure you, as he has me. More will come. Our ranks will be restored.
He saluted, his right fist striking the left pectoral of his armour. I hope you are right, I said, returning his salute, before descending into the ruins to scavenge from the dead.
The teeth of the bone saw, shrieking hungrily, returned me to my senses. As the whirring blade retreats, I am afforded a view of what lies beneath the subject's rib plate. Hearts, lungs, kidney, liver, intestine, stomach, all is relayed on the picked screen. A mild arrhythmia in the primary heart is disconcerting, as is the faint distemper manifest in the lungs. As I commit my observations eidetically, the audio continues. By now, I cannot distinguish recording from the voices of memory, and the two begin to blend together.
Perversely, our glory is diminished by the war, and the Legion's stark inability to weather attrition. In only a single solar year after Proxima, we have become an endangered species. All efforts, including my own, to arrest the rapid entropy of the Legion have thus far been futile. My only meaningful deed is to continue compiling the lexicon of the infected. It is small consolation, and I confess that I now fear for the vaunted sons of Europa.
I ended the recording at the same time I saw a figure standing in silhouette at the entrance to my apothecarium. It was a grand name for it. Field tent would be more appropriate, but it was sufficient for my needs, and most importantly, allowed me to collect genetic material directly from the battlefield. I was a carrion crow, extracting what I needed from the dead. Precious gene seed. For now, it was our only means of reinforcement.
"Enter then, if you are going to,"
I said by way of invitation. Lycaon stepped into the glow of a sodium lamp hanging overhead. I was not surprised. It had been several months since we last saw one another, since my new posting. He tapped the sodium lamp with the tip of his finger.
"You need more sun, brother," he said, smiling in that way of his that suggested he was politely mocking you. "Sallow-faced, gaunt, doesn't suit you, Fabius."
"It entirely suits me, as I know you agree. Though perhaps you should be the apothecary," I muttered, returning to my research.
"Brother," he said.
My eyes remained on my work.
"Fabius."
I looked up then and saw the hurt in his eyes. He had one hand on the pommel of his gladius, whilst he held his helmet in the crook of the opposite arm. My old comrade frowned. It would be the last time I ever felt regret. Falling to silence for a moment, Lycaon wandered around in the shadows, as if trying to find something to fix his attention upon. After a short while, I put down my files.
"You need something?" "A little courtesy from an old friend."
He gave the slight without looking at me. I bowed my head, apologized, and walked around my desk to embrace him.
"I am a slave to my work, Lycaon. I scarcely recognize my brothers anymore. They are names which I catalogue, biomatter that must be processed. I confess, it has dehumanized me." Lycaon clapped me on the shoulder, his smile warm, but his eyes holding an unspoken question. He saw the corpses still regaled in their armor at the back of the tent and went over to them.
"Were you able to extract their gene seed?"
Even Lycaon, the blind optimist, now showed concern about our plight.
"Not intact," I answered,
and joined him by the supine bodies,
"except for one."
His mood lightened. I saw it in the glance he afforded me out of the corner of his eye, until I slowly shook my head.
"The blight?"
"The blight." This is why he had come. Lycaon cared for our friendship, but he cared more for his continued existence. Standing next to him, I saw how battered his armor was. I already knew how wearing the ongoing campaign had been for our Legion. Fewer and fewer warriors of the Third were taking to the field in each subsequent engagement. As a result, the impact of every casualty sustained was magnified. No one knows where it came from, nor how many of us are affected. Thus far, the majority of afflicted gene seed comes from the immature reserve that have been held on Terra. But there have been other instances. Both he and I could have come from those reserve stocks, the tainted gene seed. Records had been mysteriously lost. Lycian's voice came out little louder than a whisper.
What are its effects, Fabius?
Degenerative. Some strain of the viral contagion has found its way into Third Legion gene stocks. There is no telling how pervasive it is.
He gestured to the files on my desk.
A record of the infected?
Yes. I am close to finding a way to test for it.
His mood brightened again.
A cure?
For the second time I shook my head, and for the second time I felt the pain of disappointing my brother.
Not yet.
But there is hope.
Barring the miraculous, our Legion's demise not only seems inexorable, it is also inevitable. Any other conclusion is unlikely, any hope remote at this point.
The remembered words of my former self are hardly more encouraging than the sight of the deteriorated organs I now catalogue. Several lesions and tumours are present throughout all major organs. Primary heart, secondary heart, multi-lung, oolytic kidney are all affected to varying degrees. Extracting samples for biopsy from each.
A curette abrades a small matter sample from each organ, harvesting enough for later analysis. And triggered by the continuing audio, I descend back into memory.
In an attempt to purge the Legion of the Blight, as it has come to be known, all infected gene seed is to be destroyed with immediate effect. This purging edict extends to all sworn brothers of the Legion who show any evidence of base-level genetic malformation or taint.
There were three subjects before me. All living, all denuded of their armour.
They were also shackled and guarded by armour-clad legionaries lurking at the tent mouth.
I already knew their fate, but had decided on the courtesy of telling them to their faces.
Gaius, Etiad, Vortexesi, I said, my voice distorted by the rebreather. You are impure. You have the blight.
Etiad tried to rise, but swift gauntleted hands held him down. I closed my eyes as they were taken, my ears deaf to Etiad's tirade.
I will need their bodies after you are finished with them,
I said to the guards, inscribing each of the blighted's names into the lexicon. None answered me as they marched the condemned outside, but I knew I had been heard. My instructions had been exact. No bolters, only blades. Amass reactive pulps organs and shreds tissue. I needed their flesh intact if I was to fabricate a cure. A heart thrust destroying the primary organ would suffice. Death was near silent for these warriors, but on their knees like traitors. The thought was an unpleasant one. As keeper of the lexicon, I had effectively become an executioner. By scientific method, I determined whether or not a taint was present. I might not have wielded the gladius that had killed Gaius, Etiad, and Vortexesi, but I had effectively sanctioned their executions all the same.
I believed further study was necessary to understand the nature of the taint. As such, I sequestered several euthanized battle brothers for testing and experimentation. I reasoned that if I could somehow unlock the gene taint that brought about the blight, I might yet be able to reverse its effects. Of course, with the gene stocks currently undergoing total purgation, any discovery at this point might be moot. But I was content to settle for a correct diagnosis and effective theoretical treatment. The booted footfalls of the returning guards announce another intake of flesh matter. I did not look up as they brought the first of the bodies. "Leave it there," I said, gesturing to the empty slabs. I only raised my eyes after the warriors had left. One hawked and spat as he did so. I ignored it. I looked into the eyes of Etihad instead, but could find no compassion or guilt at his dead man's glare. Instead, I set down my autoquill and went to a bank of instruments secured in a rack by the bodies. Cutters, saws, drills, I had an extensive array of tools at my disposal. But it was a device of my own design that caught my eye. An armature. It had four mechanical multi-jointed limbs that extended from its power battery. I wore it like a carapace shell upon my back. The arms extended over my shoulders and slaved to auto-mnemonic responses much like my armor. It was heavy, but tolerable against my transhuman frame. The burden was worth the effort, for my efficacy as a surgeon increased exponentially with its usage. "Let us see, then," I uttered to the corpse of Etihad, the limbs clicking and chirruping as if sentient, "what lies under your flesh?" I flit between past and present as the audio dredges memory, but allows resurface between the conclusion of each session and the segue into the next. For now, I am back aboard the ship's apothecarium, a partially exposed system of organs awaiting my attention. Delving deeper into the subject's body, I extract sample material from the biscopia, Haemastomon, Larriman's organ, and pre-omnor. Minor growths and abnormalities are present in each. A tremor of consternation wrinkles my sweating brow. I had hoped for better results. In the present circumstances, I cannot analyze omophagia, oculobe, Lyman's ear, sus and membrane, catalepsian node, neuroglottis, or Betcher's gland. I am able to review the potential nexus of this taint, however. The fully matured progenoid embedded within the subject's chest cavity. It too bears signs of mutation. A slow degrading of tissue and form, one I am sadly all too familiar with. The audio log almost rolls over me now, as I try to appreciate the magnitude of what it is before me on the medislab. This is not a fallen warrior that I minister to. It is a diseased one, a remnant that should have died centuries ago, but endured through science and ingenuity. It is by far my most important subject. Tissue samples from a random cross-section of legionaries have revealed an end to the taint, though our numbers are so few as to be regarded as almost extinct. In order for genetic cataloging to be considered comprehensive, I have added my own samples to the data. Initial analysis is not reassuring. Further study is needed. If I am to maintain my research, I must obfuscate my personal results to avoid purgation.
I remember well what I did. The bonds of brotherhood I broke on account of my desire and cold analytical mind.
Lycaon sat before me. He was stripped of his armor, his glare murderous. I was trying to ignore the bond I was about to break, my hand upon the lexicon where his name was already written.
"What is your verdict, then, brother?" he asked, and I saw our friendship die in his eyes.
"Soon it wouldn't matter. In any case, friendship had become an outmoded concept when levied against the value of my research. The chirurgeon clicked and whirred behind me. I seldom removed it anymore, and increasingly sought ways in which I could bond more inextricably with the device. "Lycaon," I said, "you are impure. You have..."
Lycaon stood, giving me the old Legion salute. I did not return the gesture, recognizing the scorn in it, but no longer the meaning or purpose. He then about-faced to his executioners without another word. I watched him leave, a slight nerve tremor below my right eye, before returning to my research.
As an afterthought, I called to the departing guards. "I will need his body. Return it once you are done."
The chirurgeon excises the last tissue samples for biopsy, and my analysis is complete. Without needing to see the results, I estimate the prognosis to be bleak. Degeneration of biological matter in every organ. Projected life expectancy less than a solar year. The arachnid limbs hover, awaiting further instruction. I give it bitterly. "Stitch me up!"
Via a series of cables, I have linked the armature to my neural implants. It affords me total control whilst remaining inured to the pain of the operation through strong anaesthetic. That said, the surgery has been long, and I can feel the smallest pinpricks of sensation flaring across my body. Fortunately, the armature works quickly. I smell fusing bone, and then the bioadhesive used to reassemble my black carapace. Both will heal in time, or they would if I had any time left, or if my regenerative capabilities were not compromised. It takes several hours, and by the time it is done, I am clenching my teeth and near screaming in agony. "All for naught," I rasp, rising to a sitting position. As I swing my legs over the edge of the medislab, I hear the last few seconds of the audio log play to a conclusion. "The crusade has brought us to Chemos, and a reunion with our genetic forebear, Fulgrim. Within our Primarch resides the means for renewed synthesis of Third Legion gene seed. On Chemos, there are hardy subjects worthy of implantation. Salvation now seems likely, but my own plight, while successfully hidden and at the stage of minor degeneration, is, based on all empirical evidence, unlikely to be averted. I continue to..."
I shut it down, tiring of it, and the memories the sound of my younger self unearthed. Slipping down off the medislab, I feel the pain of my self-inflicted surgeries anew and grimace as I pad along the cold apothecarian floor to the mirror. I use it for full-length visual examination,
The surface is a dull slab until activated, like a blank slate of grey wall. As I blink-click, it reflects my naked form back at me. Heavy stitching cross-hatches my skin, which is thin and sallow. My eyes have become pinched, surrounded by chasms of dark skin. Weary, I lean hard against the mirror's frame and run a trembling hand through my hair. A clump comes back, threaded around my fingers. An elixir stands ready. I will restore a measure of my vitality and keep my condition hidden from others. Lycaon, I utter to the darkness, your sacrifice shall not be for nothing. No answer returns, save for the echo of my own enfeebled voice. I have to find another way, I determine. I consider the plight of my father and the thing that shares his body. Where science has failed, I must turn to the arcane for answers. I reach for the elixir, a distilled concoction of restorative enzymes and proteins rendered from transhuman donors. Their deaths serve a purpose. My need is greater, my work more important. As I inject the draft into my bloodstream, I revel in its sudden potency. Every nerve ending screams with dagger-edged pain. Synapses ignite like solar flares in my brain. I stagger, the effects almost overwhelming. It soon subsides, leaving me vital, renewed. Cognition, physical strength, endurance, stamina, and haptic acuity are all enhanced. It is a falsehood, though. A balm for an untreatable illness that will outstrip the measures of retardation I have employed. Knowing the elixir will not last and soon not work at all, I decide that I must speak to the demon. That will also mean confessing to my father. I will not do so like this, however. My armor, I utter to the shadows. A shuffling form responds, slow, yet still animate and dutiful. A purple greave is proffered that matches the color of the automaton's eyes. My retainer is another secret from the Legion. His armor is older by comparison, the thunderbolt iconography worn and faded. A blade slit around the heart still lingers in the battle plate, a wound that cannot heal. The stitching around his neck and face is the mirror of my own. So too is his physiognomy. He salutes, right fist striking left pectoral. It is awkward, but still dutiful. I do not reciprocate. Thank you, Lycaon, I say to my vassal brother. Feeling better already.
That was Chirurgeon by Nick Keim. Narrated by Ian Brooker.